Sarah Seltzer, are you there?
I am indeed.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And for those who weren't listening to the intro, Sarah reached out last week after the show about my mom, about grief, about celebrating her, and just in appreciation for the show, but also noting that you are an end-of-life doula, which is a concept that I was unfamiliar with. I was familiar with being a doula, but actually helping people in the transition from life to death. And I thought what, and you actually suggested it. And I think it's great we're doing it this week to kind of follow up last week. So thanks again for being here.
You're welcome.
So can you talk a little bit about what it is, the work you do as an end of life doula and kind of your journey getting to that point, and any other biographical details you'd love to disclose for us today?
Okay. You know, the death thing has always been very interesting to me, even as a child. I had a very close relationship with my father, and through the journey of losing a close family friend when I was about 17, he and I made a pact that we would pull the plug on each other, basically.
Your father and you?
Yeah, my father and I. Mm. And for the next 17 years, we openly talked about life and death and how it's going to happen and possibilities. And it was a very open discussion. My siblings didn't really participate in. Anyhow, when it came down to it, I was the one to be there with him. Mm. And because he had all of his directives and powers of attorney and things in place, that helped. But I was able to stop the people from trying to bring him back.
Mm.
So, which was extremely profound.
Mm.
And I think the comfort that I gained from all of those conversations and being crystal clear on what he wanted and didn't want, it was immense. The comfort I got from that. And I was like the little Pied Piper of talking to people about death and dying right after that, thinking it was, you know, really got how critical it was.
Yeah. And it's not something that people really want to talk too much about, it seems.
Right. Well, we've been kind of trained that way in our culture to keep it at bay. Mm. You know, you don't talk about it. And especially in this current, these current times, you know, we send the body away to the funeral parlor,
right?
The funeral home, you know, people figured out a way to make money on it. It used to be something everybody did at home and took care of their own, you know, in the home. And it got medicalized. So anyway, now I'm going off on a different tangent.
No, but that's good.
Sorry.
I mean, that's interesting too, because so in other cultures, many other cultures, there is much more of a connection to death. Just like many other cultures actually have generations living in the same houses.
Exactly.
And you're kind of required to look at a lot of the different things and to ultimately give palliative care to people who are passing. And and we have it sanitized because America is all about living that best single serving life, right? And not having to think at of or look at the things that might make us sad, or actually the things that we don't want to do, like take care of our dying elders sometimes.
Correct. And it's a lot about convenience. You know, I mean, and I'm not trying to diss anybody for what they have to do and stuff, because it's tough.
Yeah.
It's a really hard thing to see, to go through with somebody. And it's not for everybody. But what I'd like to see is for community-wide, or just everybody, to talk about it more.
Yeah.
It's going to happen to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, we're designed to die.
Right.
Like everything. So if you just start looking at nature and stuff and how everything dies and it regenerates stuff, you know, it's pretty simple, really.
Yeah.
But we've kept it at bay and made it a taboo subject. I can't tell you how many people have called me morbid. but it's not. And it could be humorous, too. You know, it's what you bring to it. And it's, but the more you talk about it and you shine a light on that fear, the better we'll all be, you know?
Yeah.
And the doula movement is really around kind of bringing it back to the house or bringing it back to wherever you want to die and being really intentional about how and where you die, especially if you have like a terminal illness or something, you have some time to plan. So, you know, it takes a village, really. It takes a team to help you get that done.
I just looked up the definition of morbid just because I was curious. I hadn't really looked at it. You know, I thought somebody who's morbid or, you know, is somebody who's maybe, you know, loves thinking about death or something like that. And it's characterized by or appealing to an abnormal and unhealthy interest in disturbing and unpleasant subjects, especially death and disease. But then I'm like, is there a word for being like morbid without it being unhealthy or abnormal? You know, is it just enshrined in our last, you know, magical book, which is the dictionary, that any thinking about death must be unhealthy or abnormal?
Right. That's crazy, isn't it?
It doesn't seem, I mean, for something that's going to happen to all of us, it seems like it should be in order to give us psychological relief, or at least some kind of relief, to address death head on instead of waiting for it to sneak up on us. You know, something my dad said to me last week was that, you know, he said he thought that when mom died, that he wouldn't feel grief because he didn't feel grief when his parents died. You know, and it wasn't like it wasn't like that he didn't love them or that they didn't love him. It was like, it was just their time. Right. And so he always felt like when he had to face death, you know, of his life partner, or, you know, anybody else close to him, that maybe it would be sort of in a controllable circumstance, or that he could somehow look at it and be rational. And it's been an honor to watch him go through this phase where it's like, oh no, this is terribly real, and this is, you know, this is powerful, and to kind of not collapse in front of it, but just to say, yes, this is stronger than me, and I hadn't reckoned with it, and now I'm going to, but I had no idea it was coming.
Right, and I don't think you can really reckon with it before it hits you, right? Because it cracks you open, that grief, right? Mm. And so profound, and you just have to let it wash over you or through you. Mm. You know, I don't know. That was my experience with my dad, anyway.
Yeah,
you know, I had comfort, but I still have this huge grief.
And you guys had talked about death all the time, you know? And and I mean, my family, we talked about death a lot too. It was like, you know, philosophy major, you know, my philosophy professor, my mom and dad, total like stone cold, kind of terrifying atheist at times. You know, not that I'm a theist, or I think now he calls himself a post-theist. Like instead of just being not believing in anything, he's just like, he's over the conversation or something like that. But yeah, so it's like you talk about it, you can talk about it to a certain degree, but then actually when you face it, then it is the realness that you couldn't have imagined until you're living it. So so you felt it when your dad died, even though you had had so many conversations about death and in fact made lots of plans.
Right.
And I guess how do you, in terms of your preparedness for it, as much as you could be prepared, you know, how can we help people be prepared for it? Or how can people, I don't know, is there any way for people to prepare for it in a way that's healthier than what we currently do?
Without being unhealthy and
abnormal.
Abnormal. What is normal?
Right.
Anyway, I'm sorry. You know, it's about conversation and about being ready. Like a friend of mine here in town, Carrie, she has peaceofmindpt.com, I think, or .org.
Hmm.
And she helps people get their powers of attorney in order. She walks through all that stuff, helps you build a value statement for what you want and what you don't want.
Mm.
And so it really helps you get clear on, you know, on what's important to you. Because, you know, and so that can start a conversation as well. Because you got to do more than fill out the paperwork. It's talking about it. And another thing she does, too, is she hosts a thing about once a month called Death Over Drink.
Hmm.
And it's a Zoom thing now where people just get on there and, you know, it's usually a subject. And we talk about what's a good death.
Hmm.
You know, what does that mean to you? Is it to go quickly? Is it to have months to get your affairs in order? Is it, you know, I don't know.
I love that. No. It's called Death Over Drinks.
Yeah. Sure, we made that up.
That is, yeah, that sounds like, I mean, not to be perfectly honest, even before my mom died, because now I'm totally morbid.
Yeah. Welcome to my club.
I'm glad to be here. You know, death over drinks.
Totally.
I mean, to talk about these things, they're the ultimate conversation. I think that. Like something like that is so important because I see in other people and I saw it in myself. And I think working through it for myself is part of what has let me be more open about my process with, in terms of grief with my mom, is that many of our fears as human beings are really just expressions of our fear of death. Right? Our fear of not being good enough in the moment, not making enough money, not being able to provide, not being able to have the life that we think we should have or that we want to have before it's all taken away from us. And all that work, seeming work, comes crashing down as our egos dissolve into something else.
Right.
And that's a crushing fear to get over, and you can't really get over it, I don't think, but you can mitigate it somehow so that it stops interfering with other portions of your life, which is something that I had to do for myself, like, you know, and it didn't really happen. I didn't really feel it happen until my early 30s. I'm 38 now, so it's like not, I spent so much of my life just wrapped up in the idea of not existing anymore.
Wow, yeah. And the impermanence of this life, you know, it's impermanent. So actually, I'm going to go back and answer the doula question.
Yeah. Yeah. Please do. No, we can jump all over the place.
So yeah, basically I'm an advocate for the dying, as the family or the friends, the people they hold dear. They're, you know, to advocate for what they wish. And sometimes that can totally be done by the family. But if people feel out of place or out of water, or if they have a bad relationship or a distant relationship with the dying person, it might be easier to have somebody that's neutral to step in and help out. Mm. So it's non-medical, big non-medical thing. And so it's to advocate and make sure that their wishes are met, and to talk to the person and kind of do some life review if that's what they're interested in, and to help plan the, if they want to die at home, what do they want that to look like? You know, do they want everyone to be involved, and do they want it to be a party, or do they want it to be super quiet and peaceful? You know, trying to meet all those kinds of needs. And to kind of take the busyness out of it to their closest loved ones so that they're able to be with the dying and help process their own stuff.
Mm.
So that's kind of the doula, end-of-life doula thing. And also to help kind of witness, you know, to witness. And then afterwards, kind of help reprocess and to tell the story, or to listen, to have everybody tell the story that they went through. As you showed last week, and what really hit me is, we all have to tell the story. And that's part of the grieving process and the healing. You know, is to share kind of what happened to you, and you know, help it, because it's big. It's a big deal.
Yeah. Is what you're talking about, being an end of life doula? I know in other countries they have like professional mourners, things like that, where people are there to mourn and grieve, but also to like entertain and distract
right.
the family members to provide that level of support. You know, which may not be normally present, or it's just a cultural religious thing where it's like, yes, you bring folks into the fold to help you process in this case. And do you find yourself, I guess sort of the wrapped up in this question is, do you find yourself taking in the stories of the people who are dying? And, you know, I don't know, like, is there context in the death that becomes a part of you as you witness and help move them through?
Wow, that's a good question. I think so. Yeah. You know, it's a pretty intimate relationship to go through with someone. And so, yeah, you take something away from all of it, I hope. And it's and everything's unique. Every death is unique. Mm. You know, just like we all are.
God, that's... Wow. And then, that's actually really profound. I mean, it's funny, yeah. Right? It's like every death is unique. And it's thinking about it from that perspective is a really reminder of how amazing of a fact it is that we die.
Mm-hmm.
It's as unique as our lives, as our individual lives.
Yeah. And amazing how differently we do. Mm. You know? Some people fight it. You know, I mean, I have no idea how I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I hope I do it well, but what is that?
Yeah. I mean, do you want, let me ask one more morbid question before we listen to a little, a song. So do you want to know that you're going to die, or do you want it to be so sudden you never know?
See, tough one. Probably. I don't know.
I don't have an answer, so I don't know what to say.
I really have no answer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like maybe I'd rather not get the choice.
Yeah. Just that's all theoretical.
Don't give me a choice. I mean, in my heart, and something, you know, that you know, my mom's death was an accident and it was sudden. And, you know, I don't think she knew at any point that she was about to die. I mean, in the narratives that we told people as we made all the calls, it was really like, well, she died in a way that she would have loved. And if she had woken up in the hospital, you know, after, you know, with her chest cavity sealed up and she couldn't move and she had to stay that way for months, I've told people... And I was like, she would be like, Paul, get a pillow and end this right now, you know? So in the narrative, we're like, yeah, God, thank God she didn't just wither away. She died, you know, in a way that she would have approved of. And we can all agree on that in the family, that she would have approved of it. But it is still a narrative that we tell ourselves when, you know, especially considering it was sudden and we wanted more time.
Right.
So these things. So I say, I guess, to that in my mind, I'm like, yes, that is the death my mom would have chosen 10 years later. Right. but she absolutely, I don't think she would have wanted to know she was dying, because it would have meant she was so sick she couldn't do the things that she loved anymore, you know?
Right. And when you get there, you've had a lot of tiny deaths, you know, a lot of tiny losses. You know, by the end of that line where you're lingering, or, you know, where you've got time to process it and things like that, you've also lost a lot of other things, like your freedoms, your privacy, probably your, you know, all kinds of little losses, like your ability to drive. You know, you just see it dwindling away.
Right.
Which is also really tough.
Right.
And we don't put much onus on that. I mean, that's a grieving thing too, you know, losing your freedom.
No, that's so true. I didn't even think about it from that perspective, because it is a bunch of tiny deaths, and not mm-hmm. le petit mort, like the other comp. It is a bunch of things being slowly and, you know, just sort of systematically being taken away from you.
Right. Chipped away. Yeah.
Well, Let's take a little musical break. We're talking to Sarah Seltzer, who's an end-of-life doula, who is, man, I'm really appreciating this conversation right now, and I think it's just perfect. So thank you so much for being here on Filter. And we're going to talk to her some more after this musical break. Sarah brought us a song. Do you want to introduce it for us, Sarah?
Oh, sure. Warren Zevon. He died, I think, in 2004. He was diagnosed with lung cancer. He actually went on the David Letterman show. You can look this up on YouTube. And he wrote the album The Wind and had all these, you know, his buddies come in, and it's a gorgeous album. And this is Keep Me in Your Heart. And he died shortly after finishing it. So
here we go. Stay tuned for more after this song.
Hi, I'm Don Trethaway and a KPTZ volunteer and the host of Music from the Cardboard Box. I provide your Monday morning soundtrack, and I also connect with the remote feed from the Board of County Commissioners meeting every Monday at 9:45 a.m. It's been an honor to help make these important public health briefings available to our community of listeners. So please help us continue to provide this kind of programming by visiting kptz.org to make a donation. And thank you.
I gotta say, shout out to Don Trethaway, who, God, you know, he reaches out just about every show. And if you're listening now, Don, thank you for your endless support and encouragement as a DJ, and just your little missives, and especially the last few in talking to me about grief and feeling your parents still there and still a part of your life, even as the reality of it changes. And we're talking to Sarah Seltzer, who's an end-of-life doula and also a person who has told me about a Zoom meeting called Death Over Drinks, which I was just thinking about that the whole song. I was like, man, you know, those are my people, you know, because like really, it's like, God, I'm in the thick of the grief right now, but it's just like, there's a part of me that's been prepared for this, not like... Mm-hmm. Not like I can't, but I would, it's like things I would think about. It's not something that was lost on me that my mom was older and had health issues, and that every moment was a gift. And it wasn't something that was lost on her either, was to look at every day as a gift. And if you make it through that day, great. But just to remember to cherish it in those moments. And if you're constantly looking for the future, you're not enjoying the present. And I mean, that's just, there's no other way to live as far as I'm concerned now, although I am very excited for the future right now. So maybe that's a bad sign. No, I'm going to be okay.
No, don't worry.
But thanks again for being here, Sarah. And this has been cool. So can you tell in the last 10 minutes or so that we have, if people want to reach out to you and you know, potentially either engage your services or talk to you about what you do, how would people contact you and bring you into their lives?
Great question. Thank you. Well, I started it. I have a Facebook page that I'm trying to get out. It's called When All Is Said and Done. And it's actually a line from that song we just listened to. So if you can try that, it's fledgling right now. So I'm trying to get that up and running. So with information and how to reach me and things like that. But you can contact me via email. Is that okay if I give that out?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. It's saseltzer617@gmail.com. And seltzer is just like it sounds, like Alka-Seltzer.
So S-A, the letters S and A, seltzer, mm-hmm. like seltzer water.
S-E-L-T-Z-E-R, yep.
61?
617.
Oh, 617.
617 at gmail.
At gmail.com. So yep. saseltzer617@gmail.com. Is it 617 because you're a Bostonian?
No.
Okay. Just checking. You don't have to tell me what it stands for. But that is a Boston area code.
Washington. Yeah, that's interesting.
Got it.
I'm from Eastern Washington.
Okay.
But the other thing, I'm also going to set up, I haven't done this yet, but on a nice day, you might find me sitting down there at the plaza by the Better Living for Coffee.
Yeah.
And I'm going to set up a little table and say, hey, you want to talk about death? And just have a little open conversation with folks.
I love that. I mean, that's how we have to introduce this conversation somehow. And
absolutely.
And it's it's for our mental health that we talk about things that are hard to talk about. And I wish that it was easier for everyone. And I think sometimes that I'm lucky because, you know, my facing my death with, you know, my mom and with my parents is that I have this legacy of love to look back on. And I know sometimes death can be something where it's like, oh, there's things left unsaid, or there's things, mm-hmm. you know, that there's things that get left behind, and dealing with that psychological loss, but also never the chance to say what you wanted to say or to hear what mm-hmm. you needed to hear, that has to be a really difficult thing to go through. And it's something that, to be honest, I don't feel, other than wanting to say I love you again and again and again and hear it, I feel like she said everything she meant to say, and she left nothing undone. And that's a blessing.
And she taught you all of these great things, you know, you and your brothers. She prepared you for this by talking about it.
Yeah.
Because it's inevitable. And that's what's important.
Yeah.
And to change the language we use, too, around it, you know. Just soften it. You know, we talk, just, you know, like, think about this. You used to have your dead person in the family home. And then the funeral industry came around. And then they made it a funeral home or a funeral parlor, you know. And it's this fake place that doesn't really represent the person that they were. You know, they really made it where everybody gets the same ceremony. That's the way I grew up anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you went to this one building and this is what you did. And it's all about there's a death positive movement around this too. And it's about just bringing it back to nature and home. You know, do you know about Recompose, where they can turn our human bodies into a pile of soil?
No, tell me about that.
That's in Seattle. Washington State's the first state to compost humans.
Wow.
And it just opened. So it's Recompose. That's the name of the company. They're in the Soto area, down in Renton now. Anyway, they put these in the big vessels, and in about 30 to 45 days, they turn you, and you're a big pile of soil. So, yeah.
You know,
isn't that cool?
It might be too late for my mom, but God, she would have been like, nope, stop the fire. I want to be compost, because she loved her garden so much.
Exactly. Wouldn't that be beautiful to have a tree that was from that soil?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the ashes are cool, but it's like a 500 mile an hour road trip that burns a human.
Right.
You know, like, there's still emissions.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God. Sorry, Mom. So,
That's okay. The next one.
The next mom. What would my baby be? Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, so oftentimes the different ways that we dispose of bodies, but it is, that's what it is, because they're hazardous if you leave them out. I just remember growing up, and the rage, or the weird, you know, sci-fi rage was cryogenic freezing, right?
And so Michael Jackson.
Yeah, I don't know. Was he frozen? Oh,
no,
man.
He wanted to be, I think.
Oh, God. Well, so I've thought about this a lot. And then finally, this great comic book writer, well, mostly great. He has his problems, but his name is Warren Ellis. And he concocted this short story within one of his comics about these cryogenically frozen people that opted for the treatment, you know, in the idea that they would be thawed at some point when medicine was so strong it could reconstitute a body for them, or put their consciousness into a new body. And he imagined, you know, it's like 300 years in the future. They figured it out. The company still exists, and they have all these contracts to fulfill. They bring all these people back to life, but then they end up living on the streets, destitute, like a new form of homeless population where they don't know anybody. They're pretty much hated, and the world is 300 years older than they remember it, so it is incomprehensible to them in every way. I remember, because there was a part of me when I was really scared to die that was like, oh yeah, cryogenic freezing, you know, that's a great idea. And then reading that, and I was like, man, that is just like nailed it on the head. And not only are you talking about how silly that science is, but you're talking about the importance of term limits on life, you know, that you would reach a point where the way that you identify with the world and all the things that you love and all the ways that you learned how to interact with the world, it will be nonsense to you. It will no longer be familiar.
Absolutely.
And that was comforting in a way.
It is. Well, so, and also the whole medicalization of the end of life, though, that kind of gets back to that.
Yeah.
And how we have created this way to keep you alive and to forego or push off the inevitable death. And, you know, and also the resources that takes to stay alive. And, you know, like 97-year-old Bob Dole getting, you know, treatment.
Wait, is he still alive?
He is, and he just...
Oh my God!
Sorry, it's okay.
We can laugh about Bob Dole still being alive.
He's 97, and he has stage 4 lung cancer.
Wow!
And he has opted to get treatment.
Wow!
That was what the statement said. I just think that's a missed opportunity to talk about hospice.
Yeah,
which is super important. I haven't even mentioned hospice. We need another show.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, we should definitely do this again because this is a topic that is. That is near and dear to my heart, and now I'm in it. So it's like, well, okay, this sucks, and you know, I break down crying every day, but I'm also thinking a lot and working through this stuff, and it's the only time I feel like it's just like with you and your dad, right? I mean, it's so sweet and so touching, the relationship that you had about death, and that you could, you know, be so connected to him, and that was your bond, was in a way through death and the pact you made, you know, and mm-hmm. and that you still had to do the work of grief and to learn really what grief meant for you, but that you had the ability to share your kind of thoughts on it with him and really work on it with him before he left, and how that and how that sent you into this, you know, fascinating career that I think is something that not only, you know, can be a benefit to individual families, but just helps bring up the conversation about understanding our lives and looking at them holistically instead of just trying to save every last breath that we possibly can.
Right. I completely agree with you.
Well, do you, Sarah, we're going to do this again soon. Do you have any final shout outs or anything else? Let's share Sarah's email address if you would like to talk to her about her services, or, you know, I guess if somebody wanted to ask you a question, they could send it to S.A. Seltzer, as in the seltzer mm-hmm. water, saseltzer617@gmail.com.
Great. Perfect. Yeah, I'm happy to talk to anybody and engage, and I might be doing, I used to do a death cafe here in town, and I may start that up again once we can see people. I prefer it in person. And you know, talk to your people.
Thank you, Sarah.
Talk to your people and tell them what they need to know. Yeah. Thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
This has been a total pleasure for me, too. And thanks again for reaching out. And we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Excellent. Thank you so much. Take care.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Man, that was great. Thanks to Sarah for reaching out. You can always reach out to me if you have something to talk about or if you have a pertinent job or hobby or something that relates to what we talk about. In this case, it was death and grief. And, you know, I'm happy to talk. You can send me an email, paul@kptz.org. And again, if you want to talk to Sarah, you can send a message to saseltzer617@gmail.com.